Okay.
Roll call.
Chairman DeLon?
Here.
Deputy Chair Heidi Haynes?
Yes.
Legislative Member Julius Collins?
Here.
Dave Donaldson?
Here.
Mary Warro?
Here.
Tracy Bartels? And I'm going to pass around a sign-in sheet just so everyone can sign in.
I believe the minutes were...
Everybody sit up at the table.
Yeah, come up to the table.
Yeah, feel free to come up at the table.
I'm going to put this down here.
Join us.
I'll make
sign
a motion.
In.
A second on the minutes?
Second.
And the minutes approved, yep.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Great, thank you. So we've asked a couple of folks to come here tonight and talk to us about their program. And I see family is here, so why don't you...
Okay, well, I'm here to talk about the supervised visitation program that we've run for a while for the county. But I also brought a summary of what we did last year. I usually do that when I come here.
Thank you.
Please, Paul. The supervisor visitation program is going along okay, but we're making what is for us a significant change. What happened was that we've run it at the back behind the building, the small building behind the dogs, that shelter, which has computers that the kids family in use and that the people use to do job searches. It's not a great space, but it was available. We felt that by doing it there, we only need one person to supervise it because there were other people around. But we had an incident where the non-custodial parent wouldn't leave. The way that that it works is the custodial parent brings the child and leaves. 15 minutes later, the non-custodial parent comes and spends an hour with the child. Then that person is supposed to leave, and then the parent comes and picks up the child. But the person wanted to see his partner, former partner, and wouldn't leave. And so I had one person, and it presented a problem. It worked out. I mean, she waved down another staff person from the Darmstadt shelter, and it was okay. But it presented to us that this wasn't really the way to do it. And so what we're proposing is to move the supervised visit to the Hodge Center, which we now have responsibility for programming. It's a much better space for the kids. It's got toys, and you know, it's meant for that. And we'll put two people on to do the supervision. It's just a precaution, but I didn't like my staff being in danger, and I couldn't control the situation. So in order to comfortably do that, we're asking the legislature to increase the $25,000 a year by $5,000. That would allow us to do it properly. And we think that it's worth the money. I mean, we're budgeting over 200 visits.
Okay, thank you. So you're going to give us a formal proposal then?
Yes, please. I didn't want to create a budget unless you express some willingness to at least look at it. So I will send
Absolutely.
You a budget next week if you, or this week if you.
Yeah, please
now,
right
now you're getting
25.
Right, and that's brutal. Well, that's one of your programs, one of your many programs, obviously. This would be the extra five is because of the added staff.
To have a second staff person on whenever there's a visit. The work is to do and supervise the visit and then to write a report to the court. And if the court wants, then we come and present at the court. It's not generally the case, but we always write a report.
And the Hodge Center is in Kingston?
It's right in the middle of Midtown Kingston. It's in walking distance of the Darmstadt shelter. It's right off of Broadway on Franklin Street. It's a good facility. It's a facility that a man who was the mortician in the community died and gave the property to the city. City tore down the building and built a community center there. And we've been working from there with the city for about 8-9 years. And this year the city decided that they would rather have us run the program in there. And we're serving 75 kids a day there. It's quite substantial.
So it's easier to find than this place, right?
I hope so. Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, I know where it is.
I have to say, we walked up to the top of that farm hill, which has the most phenomenal view I've seen of these mountains. So it's no loss.
Okay, so perhaps we'll have a meeting at your place then, and get a tour.
Sure, so we would love it if you came to Dodge. And let me suggest that you come, let's say at 4 if you could, and you'll see it in action. I mean, it's really a wonderful program. And we did this summer, we found out about 5 weeks before the end of the school year that the person running the summer program for the school wasn't going to do it any longer. And so it targets the kids in the motels, the kids in the shelters, and the kids that are at risk or Title I eligible, which is the complete population of the George Washington School. And so we ran it. The county gave us a contract for helping with the transportation, and the city gave us some monies, and we had some monies from the Nova Foundation, and we've been serving about 60 kids a day there. Nice stuff. And well, we've been able to take them on trips to places like this,
yeah,
they've never seen before.
Well, we'll poll the group and see if that works for one of our meetings. Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Yeah. Thank you. We'll definitely put a proposal and we'll give you some written material about how it went to see.
Great, thank you.
All right, thank you, Michael.
You're up.
Me? I'm David McNamara. I'm from the Samadhi Recovery Community Outreach Center.
Are they all
set? There's two.
Oh, there's two.
I can pass around.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
So we are a recovery community outreach center in Kingston, New York, on Clinton Avenue in Midtown Kingston. And we basically serve anyone who is suffering from addiction. We also serve the families of people who are suffering from addiction, and anyone that's affected, you know, by that addiction. We're open from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. And I met with David earlier, and you know, we discussed some of the programs that we're running. We just started a Recovery Coach Academy. So Recovery Coach is basically a certified recovery peer advocate. So it's a program that trains people who have experience with addiction, who have lived experience with addiction, to be able to actually have a career. So your lived experience in addiction is something that you use in order to help other people. So that's one of the programs that I presented. There's a separate piece that I have on that.
Where does the funding come from for this one?
Right now, everything is privately funded. So some people will actually pay us. You know, will actually pay tuition on that, and then, you know, we've given out scholarships, but that's basically, you know, they're not funded. So we're just giving out free scholarships to people.
How many people do you have been doing that with you?
I just finished one last weekend, and we had 17 people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and five of those were scholarships.
And then they can in turn help others.
Right. So once they complete their CERPA certification, there's two other classes that they need to take in order to finish that. Then they can apply for what's called a CERPA P, which is a provisional CERPA, and then they have to get 500 volunteer hours at a facility and 25 supervised hours, and then they become a full CERPA, and then they're employable because the CERPA could be billed to insurance. There's actually new regulations coming from OASIS, I think in the next 6 months, where most treatment facilities that are more than 28 days will have to hire CERPA. So there'll be actually a number of jobs. And also, you know, if somebody has a criminal record, if they have felonies, if they've been incarcerated, you know, this is a job that they can do. Mm-hmm. There's no background checks.
I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
I'm David McNamara.
David?
Yeah.
And do you find that these people are coming from what area of the county?
The majority of the people that were at this training were from the Kingston area. We had two people. We had one person that came from New Paltz, and one person actually came from Hudson, so outside of Ulster County. But
And how do folks learn about your program?
So mostly it's social media, and then we run a recovery community outreach center. So we serve about 15 to 17 people a day. So the people that come to our center, will see things that are posted. They see things that are posted in social media. So a lot of it was word of mouth and social media. And then there's an organization called Friends of Recovery. So things were posted on their website. There's a whole network of recovery peers, and they also post jobs on those sites as well.
Now, what would you need to, in other words, like if we're looking at expanding you and rather than just in the city of Kingston area, I mean, what would it take to actually push into Ellenville and DuPont and Sobeys?
Right. I mean, what I had laid out on that in there was it's $625 for the entire program. So we were figuring to do 32 scholarships a year, and we could do those anywhere in Ulster County. I mean, right now we're doing them out of our recovery outreach center because we don't have to pay for this. We're already paying for the space. But we could easily, bring this. And we talked to Ellenville Regional about maybe doing something in, a couple of other places. Samaritan has their own program, so they like send people down to the city, so we can't do it with them, but yeah.
So they're sending them down to the city for the same thing you're doing?
Yeah, they have somebody in-house that does it, I guess, but a lot of the people they're sending down to the city are already from the city. They're not from Ulster County. It's not the Cape Road facility, it's the other facility, the Briggs Highway facility. So most of the people that are in that facility are from Manhattan, Brooklyn, Bronx.
Now, what are you considering seeking from the county? I know you've had conversation with the county executive, and I believe Ben Martello is running the opioid recovery or whatever it's called.
Prevention Task Force, yeah. Right. So we had talked about doing scholarships, within Kingston, but we would like to expand, into other regions. And some of the people that I'm training now, we'll then send them to become trainers as well. So the idea is that we'll be able to expand and have, 6 to 8 trainers by, in the next 8 months, hopefully. So that will also allow us, because right now I'm the main trainer, so I can't be everywhere at once.
So have you targeted another community as well?
Ellenville is something that we're looking at. Yeah, I think that seems to be the biggest need. Ulster County has the highest rate of overdose at this point. But if you break it down into the specific regions, Kingston and Ellenville are the two epicenters right now.
Who have you talked to at the hospital?
What's that?
Who have you talked to at the hospital?
I don't have her name with me right now, but they reached out to us. I have to double check that.
Okay. And so you could use a place, there would be no cost in a facility?
That would be ideal. Yeah.
So at the Ellendale Hospital, there may be spots where they can do that training, right?
Yes, we can look.
You can take a look at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. There's your chairman.
That's very good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're being in touch with somebody that is in there now?
Doing demo.
And you... yeah, and actually, Steve Kelly's a friend of mine.
And he's very interested in and been talking about the opioid issue for a mm-hmm. long time. He's very committed to.
Yeah, because I had a conversation with him and Kelly, right? What's her name? Is it Kelly?
Oh, Kelly Jade, yeah.
Kelly, yeah. I met her. And Kelly Jade, and I found what he was doing is quite interesting in that, in other words, the way you're doing it, in other words, much less of a, I think it seems to be a little easier for somebody that is addicted to come into your program.
Mm-hmm. There's no paperwork you basically can just come in and right. receive services.
So, my mindset is, the more people you can get trained, because, I know what, as a teacher, I understand that the best way for you to really learn something is have to teach it. Because then you have to learn it inside out, because then you want to you know, anticipate every question. So it's the same thing with a drug addiction, somebody that's actually being trained in a manner. I mean, I think it helped them even, you know, it helps them even more not going back.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually been proven. I mean, there is evidence that you know, people that go into this field, it actually is a way for your own recovery, because you're actually giving back to the community that you may have harmed. You know, now you're training yourself as a recovery peer advocate, and you're able to go back and help the people in your community that you may have harmed before, and it keeps you sober as well. So.
I would just share with the community that a family's been following this program since you approached us, and it has very good reputation in the community. People are really happy with it, and they provide alternatives to just straight treatment, which people have received well.
So this is your proposal then?
Yes, that's a proposal for the SERPA program.
So,
and I also have the other sheet is a breakdown of what we do at the Recovery Community Outreach Center.
And there is a, you have a budget in there then?
Yeah. So it's 32 people a year at $625, so $20,000 a year, and that can be anywhere in Ulster County.
Okay, good.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for coming here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Appreciate it.
And finally, almost finally.
Almost
yes.
Finally. Hi. My name is Greg Howard. I'm the executive director of Community Action. This is the end of my third year and my third presentation. So thanks for having us. I kind of put together, last year we asked for an increase at the table and we received it. From $2,000 to $9,000 for rental and utilities assistance plus program support. So we've gone with the same budget again this year as we did last year. And all I did is show out of all the rents and utilities that we've been helping, the rental program with your money helped do 9 people remain, avoid eviction and to keep their house. And that represented 50% of the people that we've helped through your monies. And why does that seem big and small at the same time? The CSBG Community Service Block Grant has strict regulations on how we spend that money, and it has to be 125% of poverty or less. So what Ulster County allows us to do is with the money from program support and the rental assistance, help people 125 and above. So we're able to reach more people than what we normally would without having to send them over to family. And when we do run out of the monies, whether it's United Way or Ulster County, we do make connections with the family of Woodstock for additional monies to have partnerships to get people what they need to survive.
So does this, the money the county gives you, are you able to help you leverage other monies?
It helps us leverage other monies that we add into United Way, helps us with that too, and we get that grant every 2 years.
And this is so important, not just for the families, but for the neighborhoods those houses are in, too.
Correct. Avoiding eviction is a huge thing for the mission of CSBG. And although we helped, I wanted to say, 3 or 4 people avoid eviction with these monies, that's really actually huge from the CSBG standpoint. So the more people we can try to help. I chose not to increase any more at this time because we're just getting used to our new number. We have not finished spending all the money from this current year, so these numbers could change a little bit more as we get closer to December. But we were anxious because I want to say, David, you were the first year, I think my second year, we did change over to rents from the backpack program. And because the backpack ended up going in different directions, and then we just needed to increase more. We weren't able to help as many people that come through the door. We do have offices here in Highland, Highland, Ellenville, and Kingston. And we just took over last 2 years Monticello too, in Sullivan County. And we've opened new offices in Liberty and Monticello to help. So that's a whole different budget and a whole different legislature I have to go to for that. This is stuff that we hope we can continue on.
Great.
Well,
sounds like
a nice year.
But
we're the nicer ones.
I haven't been in front of them yet, but I have to say yes.
If I could,
I chair this the continuum of care, which is HUD's requirement in order to bring $1 million into the county for housing. And HUD each year establishes what they call fair market rent. But they're doing something which really hurts, because they're now all of the landlords know. So the minute they see the fair market rent, they put the rent up to there. But they're not including utilities. And so people are really, really struggling because they're paying more than 30% of their gross income just to pay the rent, and then have to pay utilities on top of it. And that's why the money you're giving him is so important, because otherwise people could be evicted for not having utility money.
And the other thing,
there's nothing we can do about it except convince HUD to say this is fair market rent for including utilities. And then the landlords wouldn't be able to do that. But they don't set that parameter. I don't know why.
Let me also add, too, we just completed our community needs assessment this year. It was approved by the board in May, so we're doing our strategic plan, and that hopefully will be done next month. What we did find in our focus groups, we had a very active Ellenville focus group, and I want to say we had close to 20, 25 people show up from all different walks, including businesses, and one of the major topics was the tenant-landlord relationship and how in Ellenville, that law that changed, rents are going up, but the landlords aren't fixing it.
Yeah.
So they have no place to go, no one to listen to. So they want to find, if we could find a way to advocate for them, to say, is there somebody that will listen to say something needs to be done to bring up the standards on both sides? That the landlords will be respectful and receptive, and that the tenants will approach it in a positive way as well.
And you were looking to play that role?
Finding people, it's going to be more than me.
Well, yeah, I know you at one point we were looking at creating some legislation to create some type of tenant rights and things of that nature in the county. It's a tough call, though, and it's very involved piece of legislation. I know I was starting to look at one recently, and I haven't been following it up on it in quite a while, but I really would like to see something done with that, but if anybody has anything that they know of that have had, not necessarily blueprints of doing it, but, sample legislation or...
The state passed a significant change in tenant rights this year.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't totally studied it, but
right. I'd like to see something done in the county, there's a lot of places that need to have that. It's been an issue, and it hasn't been as much of an issue until recently. It's been an issue even for people that are not considered the low income. A couple of people brought up some of the housing, couple of the real large housing areas where, mm-hmm. it's really middle income or maybe lower middle income that are renting there. And then all of a sudden they're buying up these people who bought them up, and the same group.
Evicting people or not renewing the lease and then jacking the price up.
Yeah, and they rent it, and what ends up happening is that their price goes up, and that becomes they're going out looking for places that normally maybe lower income people are getting, and now those people are getting, and that's knocking the lower people income out of those housing, and it's creating a really...
We need affordable, safe housing. And we need incentives for people to have it so they can rent it out properly and vice versa. Because we're losing the inventory.
One of the worst things is the Airbnb. We've lost 1,800 units that was potentially affordable housing.
Correct.
And that's huge. 1,800 units. There's 400 people in motels today.
There was enough in the first place. Mm. There wasn't enough in the first place, and then you take 18.
Yeah, now there's
really
less. Significantly less. And, the people are making more money. I mean, they have a right to it, but on some level, we have to have enough housing for everybody.
But the shelters are getting, the homelessness is climbing because of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. We'll consider. And I want to introduce.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one more.
Yeah.
We can vote the resolution. And Glenn Hoagland, Executive Director, President CEO, Mohawk Preserve, who, by the way, is going to be leaving us soon after 25, 26,
almost 26
years.
Wow.
Of doing great work here in Ulster County and changing this organization and really impacting so many lives. So why don't you tell us a little about what you do?
It's really great to hear the fantastic work and the really important work you're all doing here, so I'm really honored to host this and tell you a little about what we do, which is somewhat different. And I also want to introduce my colleague Gretchen Reed, our Director of Marketing and Communications. And actually, Gretchen's going to kick it off with a couple little short films that describe our mission. So.
Yeah, we the first short video that we're going to see is an overview video that we did for a recent benefit event. But it's just a nice little capsule view of everything that happens here at the preserve. And then the second video that we're going to see is an I Love New York commercial. I actually serve on the Ulster County Tourism Advisory Board, so I've been working with I Love New York and Ulster County Tourism for many years, and they've been very supportive of the preserve. We have a lot of great vistas, so you can imagine I Love New York often calls us and asks if they can come and film here. And so we're going to show you the most recent commercial that we worked with I Love New York to put on. So I'll just go ahead and get this started. So we'll start out with the preserve video. Oh, wait, no, it's wanting to start with that, but I don't think that's what we want to start with. So let's see if I can get back to it. Otherwise, we'll see that video first. If it wants to play it, apparently it does, so we'll start again.
This summer, find what you love in New York City. So much to discover, so much you'll remember. Plan your summer vacation at iloveny.com.
That's at our beautiful Bodecue Crag in New Paltz, and accessed from our High Falls Trailhead, Spring Farm Trailhead, which I think some of you visited.
Well, while you're looking at it, a big surprise for everyone. Yeah. Dave is going to be leading us on some rock climbing after this. I just want to thank Dave now for that.
Just 90 miles from New York City, Mohonk Preserve protects over 8,000 acres of beautiful mountain cliffs, forests, fields, and streams. But Mohonk Preserve is more than just a pretty place. Our conservation science, environmental education, land protection, and stewardship programs inspire in the classroom, on the land, and beyond. Central to the preserve are over 75 miles of historic carriage roads and trails, which help people discover and connect with nature. Here at Mohonk Preserve, many roads bring us together with one mission: to protect the Shwemutuk Mountains region and inspire people to care for, enjoy, and explore their natural world.
It's very important to this whole area and to this community in the sense that it inspires a lot of people to care about protecting land.
This landscape is amazing, and just providing safe, comfortable, enjoyable access does so much for people.
Come from all over the world, we sat amazing. We're 90 miles from one of the most major cities in the world.
The carriage roads are just a great way to explore the landscape of the preserve.
It allows for multi-use, meaning that people can bike on them, hike on them, ski on them. What I like the most about hiking at the preserve is the variety that exists here. It inspires a lot of people to get outdoors.
The carriage roads provide this linked to the past. There's this connection between this rich tradition of natural history observation and the contemporary conservation science program here at the preserve. We can actually see how the landscape has changed over time. That's where the citizen science piece comes in, to bring others into this wonderful tradition of close observation.
But people also bring what they experience at Mohawk Preserve to their homes. If you learn about ecology on the Gunks, that applies to ecology in your backyard, or ecology in your schoolyard, or ecology on your city street. A good example of that is Heinz Meng talks about peregrine falcons here in New Paltz and Gardner, but also helps release peregrine falcons in New York City, where they thrived. So what we learn here at the Gunks can really help us all over the world.
The general public's ability to explore nature is partly why we still have nature. Because if you don't develop a love of nature, you don't have as much interest in protecting it.
The more people that can come to this land and be inspired by it, the better. Because we need everyone involved in environmental conservation to protect amazing places like the Gunks.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. We just thought we'd give you a little snapshot of here, and I'll describe a little bit more about the preserve. So we're actually, although we're a local community organization and here in Ulster County, we're also a national organization in terms of some of our work in environmental education and conservation science, and an internationally known organization with respect to particularly the rock climbing. We're the second most visited rock climbing area in North America, and you saw the climbing cliffs in the I Love New York commercial. But we've been around for 56 years, and as was said, we are protecting 8,000 acres. We work in parts of 5 Ulster County towns, and you know, we work with really thousands of private neighbors and landowners who, in many cases, want to work with us to protect their land and support the mission of the preserve. And we have about 37 year-round staff, but with seasonal employees, we go to as many as 70 in the high season. So I think of us really as Ulster County's Central Park. And so, of course, here you have the village of New Paltz and the Waco Valley Rail Trail and the Waco River and, of course, the Rondout Creek. And over here you have the Ontario and Western Rail Trail, Rondout Valley Rail Trail, all the way up to Kingston. And we go from really Rosendale all the way to Gardner. And so we're about 13 square miles. And, of course, right here is the Mohonk Mountain House, which is the private resort established in 1869 by the Smiley family. Mountain House, of course, is a for-profit. We're a non-profit 501c3. So we share a common heritage, but we're completely separate entities. And then this is, of course, Minnewaska State Park Preserve, the 23,000 acre state park preserve along the Chagnon Ridge south of us, which we have a very close working relationship with as well. And at one point, the Smiley family, before they established the preserve and before Minnewaska was established, they had about 18,000 acres up here, and they built 91 miles of these carriage roads, which are today multiple use, publicly accessible carriage roads. But one of the things we did recently in 2014 is we increased the size of the preserve by about 10% and bought this area that literally and figuratively brings us down off the mountain, the Mohawk Preserve foothills. And if you came out Route 299 tonight, you might have seen our latest trailhead under construction there, which will be an 80-car lot to get more people on this land. It'll be an ADA accessible landscape, so really almost like a cultural walking park, more accessible than some of our ridge properties, which some of the more maybe extreme recreationists gravitate to. So, as was said, our mission is to protect the Shawnee Mountains region and inspire people to care for and enjoy and explore their natural world. And we do that through these four integrated programs. The land protection, of course, is foundational, and we're a land trust, an accredited land trust nationally. And although most of the land was acquired from the Smileys, 5,400 acres, which was purchased in tracts over time, about 3,000 acres has been purchased since then from other surrounding neighbors to bring us to the 8,000 acres that we have today. And the stewardship is really the care of the land and our physical plan of trails and carriage roads and buildings like this and such, but also our work, our rangers and trailhead assistants who work directly with the visitors, who welcome them, greet them, orient them to the land. And as we said, in conservation science, we have a long-term data set. The Smileys started recording things in nature over 122 years ago now. And we still maintain those data sets daily. And so it's one of the longest data sets in science, and it's now used by scientists looking at climate change and the impacts of climate change on different species and habitats.
It's one of the only data sets that were collected in exactly the same place using the same equipment,
sure,
sometimes by the same family members, over this amount of time. So when folks can say, well, you know, you moved your weather station, or, you know, you're collecting in a different way, we have this huge intact set of it that's still being collected today. We both do it electronically now, but we also still hand collect so that we can maintain the integrity of that data set. It's really internationally rare.
And one of the things we've done is develop citizen science programs which engage citizens and community members in, you know, recording observations in nature very methodically. And those actually feed into some of these national and international metadata networks. So it's really a way of engaging citizen stewards and citizen scientists. And then our education program is really one of the hallmarks of our work. We serve about over 40 area schools, including many schools in Ulster County. And it's subsidized by both grants and donations from the preserve's donors. So for example, last year, I think it was last year, Veterinary served the entire second grade in Kingston
City. At JFK, we were able to underwrite 7 classes of second graders coming up for one of our programs that was funded through philanthropy through our annual benefit auction. And folks contributing who were interested in supporting our environmental education programs.
Right now, our summer camps are going on. One of the core elements of it is our Nature Access Program. And what we, that was developed out of, in 1994, we were bringing kids up from New Paltz, and we knew that the class size was like 25, and only 20 kids were coming. And they said, well, where are the other, our teacher said, where are the other kids? And they said, oh, well, they're disabled. We left them back in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So we developed a program that really is a universal design for learning. It's not only, you know, it addresses people of all abilities, and it's now permeates all of our programs and our physical work. So our educators are certified accessibility coordinators, and we work with ARCAL. We work with physical therapists, speech therapists, and, you know, we really try to teach to beyond Title III, the physical barriers in ADA, but to really that universal design for learning, which says, you know, whether you have a cognitive impairment or a sensory impairment, we can find a way to accommodate or adapt programs so that you can have a program in nature with your non-disabled peers. And really
is that through the school systems?
We do it in all of our programs. Okay.
We started in our
school field studies.
We also have publicly available 2 all-terrain wheelchairs. You saw one of them here. That folks can come and borrow for free here at the preserve. So that, and we have our sensory trail is completely handicapped accessible, and folks can actually go out on that with a regular wheelchair, or people do who just have mobility issues.
So I know that one of the issues is always transportation, getting kids to a facility. How do you deal with that?
So when we raised the money for the second grade in Kingston, that included money for busing. In some cases, we've been able to get grants for busing or donations, but in other cases, like New Paltz is really our anchor client, if you will, and they are able, through a BOCES COSER arrangement, they get reimbursed through BOCES, through the state, 50 cents on the dollar, and we, you know, greatly subsidize the program. They do pay, though, and they have their own buses. So each school district kind of has their own formula. We worked with Rondout District off and on. And
well, we have someone here from Ellenville. We have someone from Saugerties.
Right.
What happens with those communities?
we will try to work with those communities if they you know, want to come up with if the, you know, sometimes we'll work with the PTA if they have funds, or if we can design you know, and we try to get an entire class to come, so that, you know, we try to raise the money for an entire class so it's equitable, so not one class and not another in the same grade, the entire grade would be able to come. So we can definitely, we'd love to work with you, yeah. And our educators, I'm sure, would love to design a program and see how we would fund it.
When they contacted, like, for instance, they did a reference on the board in Allendale.
So
they could, we should actually contact our Director of Education, Kathy Ambrosini. So on our website, mohawkpreserve.org, the contact information for our Director of Education. So she'd be the best person to meet with. And we have a lot of different models. We work with different, working with over 40 area schools. We have worked with each different, we're able to work with and willing to work with each district on in whatever way will work
for
them.
For example, we have our Pond Keepers program, which is an in-school program.
Right, we can,
so it's much lower cost and can be more easily subsidized. And it really serves as a primer for the classroom, you know, to come outdoors if they can. But we deliver that in mostly inner city schools.
Yeah, we've done that program a lot in Poughkeepsie and other. Right, so that sometimes that is able to kick off before they can make the investment and, you know, have the busing and so on. But, you know, there are many ways that we can work with schools to get either on land or in classroom experiences from the preserve.
And, of course, as you know, the preserve is just really a haven for all kinds of recreation. We have about, in a good year, 300,000 annual visitors, and, you know, those visitors have a tremendous impact on tourism in our area. Visitor spending from the Gunks is over $20 million, if you, just from us in Minnewaska State Park Preserve, and over 500,000 people each year. And, you know, that generates about 400,000 in local sales tax for the county and distributed to the municipalities. And it's you know, the food, lodging, and retail expenditures from that tourism is quite significant. This, of course, is our free visitor center. So this area, this part of our campus, this visitor center at about 40 acres is free and open to the public. And we're open almost every day of the year. So with the sensory trail and the about 2.5 miles of trails here, you don't have to be a member of the preserve or pay a day fee as you would at one of our other trailheads.
We also have a children's forest out at the end of the parking area, and we have some children's discovery areas downstairs, special dedicated children's rooms downstairs.
And here we go. So that's what we were just talking about, the discovery room and some of the interactive exhibits. If we had thought to override the system, they would have been on.
It shuts off at 5:30.
This building's won 3 different green design awards, and we really use it as a way to welcome the community. And so this is our current campus right here on about 40 acres with the visitor center and some trails. But we just recently, a couple years ago, we developed a campground here together with another nonprofit, the American Alpine Club, and it's owned by the state of New York, which built it and installed it. And it's a partnership where the state owns it, but we manage it for the state together with this other nonprofit. So we now have a good campground in the Gunks. And just this year, we added on long-term management agreement about another 56 acres to our campus here. So now our campus will be over 90 acres, and we'll be able to expand some of the free trail networks here. And we want to expand our offerings, our free offerings to the public here.
The camping area is, what are the facilities at the camping area?
So it's a tent camping area, just 50 tent sites, and half of them are walk-in and half of them are drive-in. There are some accessible, handicap accessible sites, and it's basically a really good tent camping area.
Bathroom facilities?
Yes, bathroom facilities. They have
showers.
Showers and
And then a gathering area for folks to be able to come.
Right. It's sort of a communal campground area in that they don't allow fires on individual sites, but we have one community campfire so people can gather after their day of whatever it is, rock climbing or use of the Gunks, and get to know each other. And really.
Do you know where these people are coming from?
We have some data, but we need to improve our back office systems, which we're working on right now. They're mainly, I mean, 70% of our visitors come from Ulster County. And,
I'd be one. I did it.
Yeah, I did it.
but we do get visitors from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Massachusetts.
And of course, the city.
I think the Jersey was the biggest when we were there.
Southeastern New York, the majority of them. This long preserved foothills area, though, that I showed, the dark green area on the map that kind of brings us off the ridge, is our big project that we're working on now. This is an area almost the size of New York City's Central Park that we bought in 2014. We worked with an organization called the Open Space Institute. They bought it from the Smiley family and then gave us 3 years to acquire it from them after we did some planning to figure out how to assimilate it into our mission. So we are literally in the throes of building one trailhead now, and there will be another trailhead by 2022. On this land, and then we've opened it up for education programs, new lowland aquatic education programs and citizen science programs, and we have agricultural partners. So it really is part of this national historic landmark landscape that includes big parts of the ridge, and we think it'll be a much more accessible area. The state of New York has invested $1.5 million, and where the total project is about, it's a 1-to-7 ratio, which is about what they say every dollar invested in by the state usually yields about one to seven in private investments. So that's, we're in the process of raising the money to do this project and to finish this project now. But site work has begun, and we will have EV charging stations here, four initially, and more at our other trailheads over time. And we hope, with any luck, to be open by late August or early spring. I'm sorry, late October or early spring of this year. So just to give you an idea of how this foothills landscape works, the Smiley family in the early 1900s bought this land from a coffee and sugar trader from Brooklyn named John Arbaugh, who had a farm up here. And they really designed this landscape so that you would come to the mountain through this farm and forest landscape. And you know, they really kind of designed this as an aesthetic forestry experience for their guests. What we're doing today is repurposing it for the public, so it'll be publicly accessible under the preserve's ownership and management. And you would arrive, and they planted this allee of oaks that are so beautiful. You walk under them, and that will be a handicap accessible trail all the way out. And when you get to the other end, now you're looking from west to east, there will be a bridge that will be restored out here, and you get the views. And then we are working with Open Space Institute on the River to Ridge Trail, which will come all the way out from the village across these farmlands and around the farms and the foothills. And that'll be a free trail, also free and open to the public.
We're almost finished with that. We're just working on, actually we're having a meeting on Thursday on finalizing the signage for the River to Ridge Trail so that it'll connect up with foothills.
And this is what that new 80-car lot will look like coming off of Route 299. And there will be a trail that goes this way in the east and a trail that goes to the west. And we're in the process of stabilizing this historic, iconic tower. And we've prototyped a new visitor contact station that will also accommodate a worker who is differently abled. And that will be a new prototype for us. And then, as I said, we'll restore the Lenape Lane Bridge, which is historic, and the abutments will be retained, working with the Historic Preservation Committee on that. And I'll turn it over to Gretchen to talk a bit more about some of the broad range of community benefits.
Yeah, so as Glenn mentioned, our visitor center here is free with all the exhibits and trails, and now even with the Merrifield Woods, the addition of the Merrifield Woods property, there'll be even more trails that folks can enjoy. The River to Ridge Trail, again, which is going to be free, a 6 mile, it's actually a little over 6 mile loop trail that we're doing in partnership with OSI, so that starts right in New Paltz and brings folks right up to the ridge. Healthy Ulster, we spring spring and autumn. We've been doing this for 9 years since the county executive, former county executive Pine, launched the Healthy Ulster program. He actually launched it right here at the Visitor Center. We've been offering free one-month passes to Ulster County residents for 9 years. We're offering them this weekend again. We offer them for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Folks can come out, and anybody who's an Ulster County resident can get a free one-month pass. We've given out over 32,000 of these passes in the 9 years that we've been participating in this program. We have a library lending program. We have now 30 participating libraries, not just in Ulster County, though most of them are in Ulster County, but we have a library in Newburgh that's participating, Warwick. Now libraries are finding out about it, and so folks can go, and if they just go to their library, they can check out a free pass to the preserve, usually in sets of four, so a family can check out passes to the preserve. By the way, children under 13 are always free at the preserve. They don't have to pay a day-use fee or have a membership. We donate memberships and day passes to over 50 area nonprofits. We also have adopted two sections of highway, both up here on 4455 near the Visitor Center, and then down in our new foothills area, we adopted that section of Route 299 through the Adopted Highway Program. We were an original supporter and member of the Shawangunk Mountain Scenic Byway, and we're a key destination on the byway, and we like to think of ourselves as the green heart of Ulster County because of our forests and streams and things like our carbon sequestration. Glenn, what is the impressive number of carbon that we sequester?
In relative terms, it's
it sounds modest, impressive but, until he tells
you. We really are trying to think of the preserve in terms of what is our social impact, what is our community impact, and it's connecting people to the nature in their lives, but also protecting the landscape resilience that we're going to need in the face of climate change. So our slopes are holding back important soils. Our woods, forests, and wetlands are mitigating floods that would otherwise be much more severe. Our forests are sequestering about 9,100 metric tons of carbon that would otherwise be released as an atmospheric pollutant. They're filtering clean air and pure water into the groundwater, and of course, we're a biodiversity hotspot for the northeastern United States. So the wildlife habitat here that thrives and evolves even in the face of climate change, we're really kind of a refugia. So those are some of the community values of the preserve. Really, when nature is left alone to do its valuable work for free. And
we also have a very active volunteer corps. We have over 400 volunteers in all of the program areas that are listed here, including some new groups like our dog ambassadors, because we do allow leashed dogs on the preserve. But as you might imagine, some folks think that their dogs don't require leashes, so we have a lot of rogue dog activity. But we thought one great way to address that would be to have folks who are willing to go out with their properly leashed dogs and be dog ambassadors and encourage others to do so. And so we're working on actually being able to give away leashes to folks who don't have leashes with them, or have loaner leashes that we can give, and have dog rewards for people who are modeling good dog behavior. We also have just all kinds of our photography group, which I work with, I'm sure of them. They have over 60 active volunteers. You see some of their images behind you in all of our slideshows. All of our images that we use are, the vast majority of them are taken by our volunteer photographers. We have folks who do bike patrol for us, backcountry patrol. Even though we have a fantastic ranger crew, we could never get to all 8,000 acres on this preserve if we didn't have folks who were volunteering to be trail keepers and to help us be trail builders. So it's really a group effort. And I know there's a very impressive number per year of hours that we put in. I'm thinking it was...
ranges about 13,000 to 15,000.
I think our last year was about 15,000 hours of volunteer time, which is just phenomenal. But again, with an organization this size, we would not be able to do all of the things we do. We have volunteers who help with all of our program areas, in citizen science, in volunteer educators who help with the school groups and the camp programs. And we have a really fantastic program now of youth nature ambassadors who are teens who come and work with us. And they're so excited. They get valuable experience, but they also are able to, they work with our summer camp kids, they work with our education programs.
They get work study credit.
And they get work study credit. And many of them come back later then and volunteer for us in various ways. So it's a great way to get involved local students, high school students in the preserve.
If you have any other questions, if we have.
If we haven't overwhelmed you with all our slides.
I just have one, and that is you heard some of the stories tonight from these organizations. If you're not involved with them, please consider.
Yes, we have.
We think they're important enough to fund, and that's where our money's going.
We have done work with family over the years, and we welcome the opportunity to work with any of your organizations who like to get clients out. You know, if being in the outdoors is something that can really work for your clients.
Yeah, we actually just had a group, the Maya Gold Foundation out of New Paltz. They brought in a group of unfortunately victims of human trafficking, and so we provided access to the group, free access to the group, for them to be able to come and experience the preserve. And we're always happy to work with community groups and. They're in various ways. So
the
programming.
I was going back to the Smileys when they created the preserve in 1963. They said in their original trust agreement, you know, we don't want to just protect the land. We want to create experiences on this land where people can discover their relationship to nature and to each other. So they wanted to really, you know, from the very beginning, the relationship of people to land and people to each other was part of the mission.
Our slogan is saving the land for life, and we mean all life, including human beings. Not just people always think about plants and animals, but we really also put people at the center of nature in our model of land protection.
Beautiful. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. Sorry it was so hard to find. We know people, sometimes it can be challenging up here in the mountains.
Well, we're going to wrap it up, I think, with this resolution.
Yep.
Would you have enough time to at least show us the sensory trail?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Great. We're going to get through this quickly.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yes.
Right, so resolution number 357, approving the New York State Office of Children and Family Services 2019 Resource Allocation Plan Youth Bureau. I spoke to Mark Ryder. This is really about submitting a report to New York State for the funding that they receive from New York State.
Right, it's a, every year. You know, they put in, and then whatever the state says they're gonna give them, that's one of
it. It's in the report. So I think I had a motion from Mary.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for attending. And, let's consider your place, or Mary, perhaps there's a place in Saugerties. I know you always have to travel and be willing to come up your way or anything that might be fun to have.
Just a minute.
Saugerties.
Thank you.
And, We should probably have a conversation with the county executive on how he's doing the budget this year, but I'm sure that the member and Michael, you sent your stuff to the county executive for the budgeting process yet.
Have
you sent your stuff to the county executive for the budget?
I haven't yet, though. I wanted to present to the committee first. I will.
So why don't we get the rest of the folks probably next month, right? So maybe in late September we can sit down with the county exec, have a conversation amongst ourselves, and make some recommendations.
Yep. Okay, very good.
Good. Yeah, the resolution. Absolutely.
Will anyone who wants to take a quick walk? down to the sensory trail, which takes right down to the bridge.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Can we have a table of Miguel?
That was a nice thing.
Scholarship. Yeah. Tested.